Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 380 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 15th of June, 2018, as I record this. So today I have an interview about strategy and business plans for authors with Johanna Rothman. So if you are ready to review your goals at mid-year, because we are only a couple of weeks off mid-year, we will give you some tips on how to do that. But of course, it's relevant whatever stage you are on your author journey, because when we talk about strategy, we're not talking about complicated documents and spreadsheets and all of that. We are really talking about what you want to achieve. And so, yeah, I hope you find it interesting. And Johanna is great fun. She really is a character. And I just love talking to her. She's brilliant. So I hope you enjoy it. So in publishing news this week, a few interesting things. First of all, the New York Times reports that Michael Lewis, who's an incredibly successful nonfiction author, has signed a deal with Audible for 4 audio original stories now, which he will narrate himself. Now, this is really interesting because, of course, we've seen massive advances for audio first stories. Audible have been snapping up a whole load of content. And I mean, I think this is great for podcasting, for audiobooks. It, you know, the more people are listening to audio, the more chance we have to reach people with audio. I will again sort of mention my own audio experience, which is that I've for now stop doing fiction audio because I'm just not finding a way to break through with that. Whereas my non-fiction audio, because I have this podcast, I have a way to market it. The problem, I think, with Audible right now and the audio industry is that it's not indexable in any way. It's not searchable. So you're having, and the Audible store and the iTunes store, they're just not designed for finding and discoverability. Like, you have to be super famous and at the top of the charts for people to find your book. So I think audio is going to change dramatically in the next few years. I think we're going to see ways of searching. This may be the tipping point. If you've been listening to the show for a while, when I've talked to Thad McElroy a couple of times about the future of publishing, and we've talked about the book itself being metadata. Why do we have to come up with keywords and categories when the book itself should enable machine learning and AI to figure out who the hell would like our books? So I really think that the problem of audio, the discoverability of what is in that audio file, is something that they will have to solve for further growth in the audio market. So this is fascinating to me. I'm pretty excited about where audio is going. And I was talking to someone about this today. I am still thinking about starting another podcast for my fiction. More on that when I actually sort it out. Just an update on Cockygate, which we talked about a couple of shows ago. Publishing Perspectives reports that in a court case mounted with the Romance Writers of America, the Authors Guild has prevailed against Felina Hopkins. The Guild says authors can use the word cocky in titles. So that is good news for everybody. And I mean, I don't think the issues of trademarks and things is going away. I think we will see some more interesting intellectual property law coming through, but yeah, go ahead and put cocky in your title if it's appropriate, obviously. Also really interested to be reading, as ever, I'm an avid, you will all know by now, I'm an avid fan of Christine Catherine Rush and Dean Wesley Smith. And the last few weeks, Chris, on her blog, Chris Writes, Chris with a K, KRISWrites.com, Chris has been blogging about the sort of impact of the embezzlement at literary agents Donardio and Olson, which has affected authors like Chuck Palahniuk and other literary estates. Now, Chris and Dean have been discussing the need for literary agents on their blogs. And Chris has one on learned helplessness this week, which is super interesting. And I definitely think whether or not you're like really, really, yes, I love agents, I want an agent, I really definitely want an agent to do everything, then I still think you should read this stuff. I think you will do better in your author business if you understand the pros and the cons of these things. Also, they both talk about the possibilities of licensing your own rights. And one of the reasons I set up curlupppress.com over a year ago, 18 months ago now, is so that we would have another a more official publishing imprint that didn't have my name in it. So we could start doing other things like rights licensing. And what's interesting is even just this week, we've had inquiries about Korean rights, which is hilarious considering the news, Bulgarian rights, and Egyptian rights have all been inquiries this week. And that's fascinating to me because, you know, I've had foreign rights deals before that I've done myself, German and French, for example. But these are kind of slightly, well, they would not be considered massive markets, although Egyptian, which is Arabic, is, you know, interesting in that way. But very, you know, you don't need to have somebody getting these things for you. It can happen just from being out there in the world. I've also, just on intellectual property rights in general, I've mentioned dead authors before. So of course, at some point we'll all be dead. And we'd love to all think that our works will go on earning money for the life of copyright, which is obviously 50 to 70 years after the death of the author, depending on what country you're in. I have talked before that I went after James Michener's The Source, which is a book that influenced me highly in my life, in my writing, and it was not available in Kindle format in the UK. So I went to Michener's estate, which is his university in America, and several times asked for the rights to the Kindle or the ebook rights for the UK in English, and they kept saying, oh no, they're with somebody else, big publisher. And I'm like, yeah, but that big publisher has not actually acted on this. These books are not for sale and you're not getting the money. And amusingly, I think I must have done that. I was in Austin when I was doing that. So a couple of years ago, because James Michener's grave is in Austin, Texas. So I went to visit that, took pictures to prove to them that I was a fan. but basically, my campaign seemed to hit the spot because James Michener's The Source and all his other books are now available on Kindle in the UK. So that makes me laugh. But interestingly, I've also seen this week, and Graham Masterton, I don't believe is dead, but I think he's still writing. But Graham Masterton's books, older books, have been re-released through Open Road Media, which they specialise in revitalising backlist authors. And I've just been reading a ton of really old horror. I love old horror. It's exactly my kind of thing. I'm not into gore fests, but I love old horror full of demons and fun like that. And it's been really interesting to me to see that. And it has resurrected my interest in inquiring about dead author rights. And I am at the moment going after another author who will remain nameless at the moment. but whose books influenced me back in the 90s when I was at university, and definitely has an impact on my fiction now. And this author is dead, his publisher is dead, and we went through the acknowledgements in his book and just kind of searched for everyone. And because, definitely an older author. So we're now going through the process of tracking down the possibilities for for this particular book anyway. So fun times with rights indeed. And I wanted to bring this up today because, you know, so often we're like, oh, must, you know, hit the list today and must, finish this book now and sell this tomorrow. And, you know, we're sort of now focused. But I'm looking here at trying to sell a book or try to buy the rights to a book where the author has been dead for nearly, well, 30 years or something, 25 years. So this is, I think this is really interesting and something for us to think about, like the longevity of our careers as authors, the longevity of our intellectual property rights, the fact that over time, it just takes time, you know, to get out there. Hopefully we'll all make money before we're dead. Oh, anyway, I'm having fun. So indeed, I am having fun and I'm having a very good week. I hope you can tell that I'm pretty giddy at the moment. And I think the main reason is I talked about finishing energy last week, that part of the process when you have to do all the niggly and slightly annoying things you have to do to finish a project. So, you know, and some of it is really soul destroying. I just have to say it, but some of the niggly little publishing stuff can be very annoying. But you have to do it. You have to finish a project or it won't get out in the world. But I certainly felt my energy was really dropping. I'd also been working very hard, so having a break has really helped. I do still have some outstanding tasks in terms of my course on how to write nonfiction, but the book is out in the world doing its thing, and the audiobook is also out. Yay! I'm so thrilled about that. So yes, the audiobook of How to Write Nonfiction is out now. And of course, if you have the ebook, you can get it on special in audio or use your credit. And I don't narrate it, but my professional narrator, Caroline, is almost like a doppelganger. She doesn't laugh a lot though, because of course it's very professional. Available on Audible and iTunes. So yes, back to my giddy energy. I mean, we had a trip to Spain, which is enough to make anyone giddy. I do love Spain. Might end up moving there at some point. We just had such a great time. The food in Madrid is just fantastic. I think just the energy of the Spanish culture is very relaxing to me. And also I was on book research trip, which is just my happy place. And when I, you know, when I looked at the life I wanted to live, it was about reading, writing and travel. And so that's what I've been doing. And it certainly brings me alive. And yeah, so, and what's kind of funny is I'm moving from that finishing energy phase around how to write nonfiction into the starting energy phase for the next novel. And I'm in that point where I'm in love with the idea. I love the book. Possibility is stretching ahead of me. You know, I'm at that point where nothing can go wrong. It will just be amazing. Ah, yeah. So it's fun. But of course, I'm making the most of it because I understand the cycle of the creative process, and you don't always get these giddy moments. You go through all the different steps of the journey, and if you listen to this podcast in a few months' time, I'll be going through the finishing energy and the annoying parts of the cycle. Who knows? But this is a cycle. We go through it with every project. The mindset stuff is kind of predictable, that I will at some point hate what I'm writing. I'll think it's a pile of crap. But at the moment, I'm really enjoying the fact I'm in starting energy mode and really enjoying that. I should say the working title for Arcane Thriller number 10 is Valley of Dry Bones. And those of you who have any theological interest, as I do, yes, I'm doubling down on the religious thriller aspect. And of course, being in Spain, I just have to do that. Yeah, Toledo being the centre of the Spanish Inquisition, and lots of really fascinating history back there. So I have a notebook full of ideas, a phone full of pictures, and you can find some of them on Instagram at jfpenauthor is my Instagram. And I'm actually really enjoying Instagram. It seems for me where I am using it, which is not a massive power user or anything, but I'm just enjoying using it for fiction pictures. And I was particularly excited to see the illustrated 13th century Saint Louis Bible. And the reason I went to see that is because, like, 2 years ago now, I was in, is it 2 years or 1 year? I'm losing track of time. But I was in New Orleans when we did the Authors on a Train, when we co-wrote American Demon Hunter's Sacrifice on a Train and in New Orleans. I visited the St. Louis Cathedral, And as I do on my trips, I looked around for things that linked to potentially story or that might give me an idea. And I saw this replica Bible at the back near the statue of Joan of Arc. If you have been in that cathedral, there's a statue at the back of Joan of Arc, and where at the time they had that replica Bible was right near there. And the copy is of the Bible that is in Toledo Cathedral. And that is the type of synchronicity I love. And so I am, Valley of Dry Bones is going to link Madrid and Toledo with New Orleans and San Francisco. And yeah, fun. I'm loving it. I hope you are loving your project right now. And if you're not, just remember that this cycle will continue with every project you do. I also had a BookBub this week. So my London Crime Thriller trilogy hit multiple bestseller lists after amusingly talking about the long-term thing. Occasionally, you have to also be excited about hitting some lists. Got into the top 100, got 59 on the US store and 65 in the UK store overall, which meant I sold quite a few books, which was rather nice. Also, if you are interested in doing this kind of advertising, and you're interested, I ran 3 days of Facebook ads prior to the BookBub ad so that when it hit, the books were already in the top, like 3,000 in the store. So that kind of ad stacking approach is a classic method these days. So don't rely on one advertising method. Try and stack a few together. But yes, I'm definitely swinging back towards JF Penn after a sustained nonfiction few months. And also I have the next Penny Appleton draft. So I have lots of fiction. I'm super happy. And just amusingly, we're going back to Spain very soon. Next week, in fact, because we're doing another trip, not a research trip, a relaxing trip. But yeah, if you haven't been to Spain, definitely put it on your list. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Really love to hear from you. I did put up an in-between-isode, and Edward Downward says, as a fiction writer, I wondered if I should bother to listen through the bonus episode on how to write nonfiction. I was wrong. Lots of interesting tidbits to consider. Adam at Visual Fatigue on Twitter also said he was excited to find a surprise in-between-isode this week. Dennis says, love your podcast, and I listen while I'm walking the dog at night because it's still over 100 degrees here in Arizona. I love Arizona. It's definitely one of the places I'm coming back to. G.A. Jameson says, she listens to the show, G.A. listens while cleaning at the weekend. It's amazing what you can learn whilst cleaning the bath. And that was totally gendered of me to assume as a woman who's cleaning the bath. Apologies to everyone out there who cleans the bath, whatever gender you ascribe to. Daniel Stuhl says, so on the bright side, if you dislocate your knee at training, you've probably got an extra 6+ hours a week to devote to writing that new book. This isn't what you meant by a healthy writer, is it? Actually, on the healthy writer thing, I am amusingly, I have started running in the mornings. I don't know if I could call it running yet, but it's definitely something that moves faster than walking. And thanks to Ewan Lawson, Dr. Ewan Lawson, my co-writer on The Healthy Writer, whose chapters on running have always encouraged me. And I was just like, do you know what? I'm just going to stick in a few minutes of running in the morning and been feeling good. But as I said, I have been feeling really good this week. And back on my no sugar thing, which again, probably helps. Lots of things go into being a healthy writer, don't they? And finally, Liberty Speedle says, listening to your interview with David Cochran while I reorganise and clean my pantry, I swear I am not avoiding editing my next novel. Definitely a good way to procrastinate. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I use Ingram Spark for my extended distribution, and recently I have been doing a lot of it. I have produced all 3 print editions of How to Write Nonfiction with Ingram Spark, the paperback, the workbook, and the large print editions, and I've done some YouTube videos on doing workbooks and large print if you want to go check that out, youtube.com/thecreativepen. Ingram also do hardbacks, which I haven't done yet, but I'm definitely considering. If you want to sell to bookstores, universities and colleges, libraries and anywhere that requires a discount, then you can use Ingram Spark and your books will be available in the catalogues alongside other retailers. You can also order author copies at a great price, and you can get bulk discounts as discussed with Dave Hendrickson in episode 377, when Dave ordered hundreds of copies to sell directly to schools. And remember, if you are currently using KDP Print or CreateSpace for your basic paperbacks, that will only make your book available in limited places. So using Ingram Spark as well, in addition to KDP Print and or CreateSpace, will help you. And for how to write nonfiction, I used all three services. So I use KDP Print for the basic paperback on Amazon, CreateSpace for the large print and workbook for Amazon, and Ingram Spark for all of them for everywhere else, which is absolutely, I think, the way to do it if you really want to maximize your print distribution. Now, I know that for many years I didn't care about print distribution, but I'm actually making more and more money from print every month, so now I'm pretty serious about it. So yes, thanks to everyone who over the years has just harangued me about print. I finally succumbed. Also, a tip from listener Derek Miller. Thank you, Derek, who says, and he gave me permission to share this, I had dinner last night with a bit of a high up on the food chain librarian who purchases for regional areas of libraries. He shared with me that since typically library budgets have been limited or cut on new book purchases, almost 100% of new book purchases are going towards large print. Because large print can be read by everyone, standard print cannot be read by everyone. And again, I have a video on doing large print or a post on it, so go and check that out. But with Ingram Spark, you can distribute to libraries and do that discount. Ingram Spark also have an awesome podcast, Go Publish Yourself, which says something about their sense of humour. Great team over there at Ingram Spark. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. That was quite a long advert, but basically I'm clearly a fan and you've got some tips there too. So even better. Right, a massive shout out to everyone supporting the show on Patreon this week. We have reached a really big milestone goal for me, over 500 supporters, which I think puts me halfway to 1,000 true fans, as described by Kevin Kelly in his very famous post. I'm so thrilled. I've been using Patreon now for 2.5 years, and some of you have been with me that long. I really, really appreciate your support, and knowing that there are people out there who love the show this much keeps me doing the show each week. And thank you so much for throwing in a few dollars a month. Thanks to everyone who supports the show, and thanks to new patrons this week: Cheryl Thomas, Ryan Day, James Anderson, David Winters, Joanne Carson, Martha Ann Coote, Gabriella Campbell, Jason White, Barbara L. Woods, Leslie Lang, and LJ Thompson. A bumper crop. Woohoo! So, yes, come and join us. And I really do. Oh, and I should say, come and join us, because you get an extra 40 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes of audio Q&A every month if you join the Patreon. And it's only a couple of dollars a month, or you can throw in a couple of coffees a month if you like. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Johanna Rothman. Hi, Johanna.
Hi, Joanna. It's so nice to be here. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's great to have you on the show. And we hung out in Oregon a while back, but just an introduction for everyone else. Johanna is a management consultant for software managers and leaders specializing in agile project management. And she is known as the Pragmatic Manager. She's a professional speaker and author of 12 nonfiction books, as well as short stories and romance. And today we're talking about business plans for authors and how writing writers can manage projects more effectively. And I got to just heads up, everyone, don't turn off. Johanna is great. And not, it's like I was saying to you before we start recording, you're just not like your introduction at all. Do you get that a lot?
sort of. I get the fact people always say to me when they meet me in person, you write so much taller than you are.
So that's great.
So for those of you who don't know, I'm 5 feet on an extremely good day. So I, you know, and I've never been any taller. And I always include humor in my writing, but I write about serious stuff. So I don't actually have any humor in my bio, which maybe I should change.
I think you should, because that's what I really liked about you, is you bring your humor into these topics that can sound quite businessy and kind of languagey. You know, there's so much jargon in this area. But just tell us a bit more about you and how you got into writing.
So I am not a writer by nature. I believe, so you've had journals for years, right? I've been listening to you for years on the podcast. I mean, yay, it's so exciting to be here. Okay, so I am not a writer by nature. I'm a talker. I'm one of those extroverts that every introverted writer is not so excited about, because I'm not altogether sure what I'm thinking until I actually say it out loud. So when I started my consulting business, I got, my father-in-law gave me, I believe it was called Howard Jensen's Guide to Consulting Success. It was a self-published 3-ring binder. And on like the second page or something, he said, consultants who write and speak make more than $100,000 a year. Consultants who don't write and speak make $30,000 a year.
Wow.
I mean, this is a no-brainer. Write and speak. So I started with the speaking, and then I kept on with the writing, and I got a monthly column for Software Development Magazine. That was back in 97. And then I had more writing. We wrote mostly in paper back then. I know, it just seems astonishing. And the deadlines were so long, and I would send in a column and it would take months for it to come out. And then I started my blogs in 2003. So I've been writing very regularly since 2003, but it's not something I grew up wanting to do. If you'd asked me, I would have said, I want to be paid to read for a living. Mm-hmm. And this is actually as close as you can get.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, and I wrote that down too. When I wanted to get out of consulting, I wrote down, I want to read and write and travel. That's my ideal life. So, and I see all the, those people who aren't on the video, all these books behind you, which are, you know, you've obviously got a big library. I just want to also point out for people just on audio, you said you started blogging there in 2003. And, you know, without asking your age, you are on the more mature end of, of the...
For God's sake, I'm 62.
Well, why I wanted to ask you, because is you are a technical person. And like you said, you've been writing since 2003. And so many people, even like I get millennials. My sister said to me the other day, and she's like 31, oh, I just can't understand computers. So I wondered if you would give some perspective on technology and age and the kind of things that people, that the excuses that people put up around it.
So, yeah, if there's a reason not to do something, people will make a reason. I'm actually just running a blog post right now about this very question, not specifically technology. But you and I have a couple of colleagues who are digital nomads. They travel the world and write. I know some people who actually travel the world and code. And I was thinking to myself, I could never do that. And I thought, why the hell not? I mean, sorry. Why the heck not? So what prevents me? Now I have a husband who has a real job, so I would have to figure out what to do with him. Which means bring him along, not leave him behind. So, I mean, but I think that all of those excuses are fear. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of fear in this world. We have a fear personally, for anything new. And not that everybody has a fear of everything new, but every so often we look at things and we say, oh, I can't do that. Yeah, I think that that's fear. And we have choices. So the question is, do we want to get over that fear and allow that thing into our lives? Mm. Or do we want to say, you know, maybe not?
Yeah. And I think, and using that fear, you know, I wanted you to come on the podcast because there was a session at the Oregon Business Workshop, which actually I think had business in the title. And when we talked about business plans, you and I were looking at each other, you know, across the room, just going, why are people not getting that? So do you, why do you think that people in the more creative, you know, writing space have a fear around the business side?
So I think that they hear us maybe talk about spreadsheets and they totally freak out. Mm. Now, you and I both know Matt Buckman, who has this really intricate writing spreadsheet. Oh my goodness, I fixed that. My writing spreadsheet is much simpler than his because I only want to know what my writing totals are. I don't do all this other stuff. And I have found that because I'm not afraid to change something, I get more out of it. And for everyone thinks, oh, you need a Gantt chart. Oh, I've been managing projects since 19. I've never used a Gantt chart, never in my entire life. I hope never to have to use it. I find them unreadable and unworkable. Now, there are lots of people who love their Gantt charts. And I think that when we talk about plans, they think, oh, this big plan. And then how am I going to get to the details? I mean, you and I think, might plan the same way. I have one document that says, my strategy for this year is to make money doing these things. Mm-hmm. And then I track the money because we are business owners. And we have to track the revenue. Yes, we have to track the income and the outgo. And I have a very simple way of doing that. It's addition. And a spreadsheet will do that for me. I'm actually very fond of saying, I cannot do arithmetic. I can only do math. Right? Give me symbols. I'm a very happy woman. Make me do arithmetic. I feel like I'm in third grade again.
Mm. Well, I'm definitely with you there. And Matt Buckman was on the podcast talking about the letter to your estate, if people estate planning. But yeah, you're right. I don't even have a spreadsheet to track my production. And my plan, similar to you, is really just a kind of rolling one pager. But we're going to come back to that. I do. Let's just be really basic about a business plan then. So we've said like it might be a one pager, but why is it important to even think, like take yourself out of the detail? Like you said, you could have a spreadsheet with tracking your words or Scrivener or whatever, but why is it important to take yourself up a level and look at the business as a whole?
So this is what I actually teach my clients, right? When you are down in the weeds, it's really hard to see where your business is going. If you say, I have a strategy this year of these kinds of workshops or these kinds of books or these kinds of speaking or these kinds of writing, then you can actually look at it every month. Or here's how I'm doing against my business. And so when I made the strategic decision to write more and travel less a few years ago, I actually had to say, how am I going to replace my income from speaking? If I'm not traveling the world, and I still do, but not as often, if I'm not traveling the world every couple of weeks, how am I going to make that money? And I better have a plan, not because I'm so money hungry, but because the work I do fulfills me. Right. So if I know why I'm working and I know what I need to do to have a reasonable income and have happiness, then I'm all set. But if I didn't write it down at least one page, I'm not sure if I would really make the right decisions.
I think what's also interesting is we forget why we made a decision. And if you write it down, then you remember. So one, I think this is really important at the moment in the indie community, because of course there's the high production KU focused model. Then you've talked there about writing and speaking. And then there is the being a publisher, which some indies are getting into. There's the even things like Patreon about subscribers and that type of thing. So if you make a decision, you might forget why you did something. Like for me, I'm never going to be KU high production because I'm not a high production type person. So when you made that decision to stop speaking, you know, did you examine the reasons why and write that down so you'd remember it later? Or how do you reflect on that over time?
So we were going to get to this later, but
yeah, we'll do it now.
Yeah. The decision I made was because I have vertigo and it's permanent. I have a rollator and I use the rollator and I walk really fast with the rollator, but just getting on a plane and going somewhere, I get, I like to call myself a dizzy broad when I land, because I am literally dizzy and I'm not so with it. So I really, I do my best work when I'm with it, not when I'm dizzy. So I really want to save my travel for those circumstances where it's really worth it. And it can be worth it in many, many different dimensions. Mm-hmm. But I really want to make sure it's worth it for me. It's worth it for my business. It's worth it for where I'm going. So I had an invitation to go to Sweden for one day. I'm in Boston. Mm-hmm. Now, you going to Sweden for a day, you know, you go to Heathrow, well, whatever,
yeah.
Someplace, and you take a 2.5 hour plane ride and you're in Sweden and it's fine. And you might go for a day and you might actually stay overnight. I mean, but it's doable. I'm in Boston. That's not really doable.
No.
I think even if I didn't have vertigo, it was not doable. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to say, what benefit do I get, right? What is the value for me? Hmm. What is the value for the other person? And when we start to think about value and not anything else, and it has to be a two-way thing, right? So you get a lot of value from having your books go wide and writing as you do. And you get a lot of value from the podcast. You deliver a lot of value. So when we start to think about the value proposition, oh God, buzzword bingo.
Yay!
we knew we would do it at some point. But when we think about value, we might make different decisions.
So it's interesting there, you talk about value. And I think the other word is the kind of the consequences of our decisions, because that to me is so important with planning. It's like, okay, if you stop speaking, if you stop traveling for speaking, then your income will be affected maybe 3 months down the line or, you know, or whatever. Or if you pull all your books from wide and just go into KU, the impact will be that you're not building up an audience on these other platforms. So how can people really, when they're doing their, and we're really talking about strategy at this point, and we'll come back to the detail of the business plan, but how can people start to think about the consequences even months and years ahead in their strategy?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think that the part of it is to say, what are the short-term benefits, I think, right? I mean, we could do pros and cons, but I much prefer to think about the benefits and in the short term and the long term. So, for example, all of my books are wide also. I have them as many places as possible because people buy books because of the authors, right? So they hear about you, they buy your books, they hear about me. They read another piece of writing, they do something, and they buy my books. So I want to make my books as available across the world as possible. Mm. And I think that, and that if you don't have a reputation yet, if you're still building your reputation, you might say, well, I'll be in KU for the next 3 months or 6 months or whatever it takes. And then I will see how many people I have on my mailing list. And I will see how many people, where I'm, how much I'm selling, and can I take the short-term hit of coming out of KU to go wine? And then what do I need to do as a strategy to get all those other people around the world hearing about me?
Hmm.
Right. So it's short term and long term. And how do you integrate the two? And what happens when you have that inflection point of change? I think that one of the things that we often don't think about is in our little businesses, we have exactly the same kind of change that every other company does. When we change from doing things one way to another, we might have a decrease in sales, we mm-hmm. might have a decrease on our mailing list, and we are expecting some other result. So we will have a short-term change followed by a longer-term other status quo, right? But how we get from one place to another is part of our strategy.
Yeah. And I think also the education, you know, circling back to what we said at the start, you know, say keeping up with technology, that when you started blogging in 2003, I mean, it's almost unrecognizable what situation we're in now with technology. And to me, that upskilling, so for example, I've been doing a lot on screenwriting. That makes me zero money right now. And in fact, it costs me more money because I'm not putting that time into creating another book, for example. But we take these dips in order to look towards the future. So, and it's, I just, you know, coming back on your decision around consulting. So you're a consultant and a speaker, mm-hmm. and that's money for time.
Yes.
How do you judge money for time versus money for building assets? And maybe explain what that means for people who might not understand.
So I have these books and I have workshops. And the nice thing about what I call the automated workshops is that I don't actually spend any time delivering them because I already recorded them. Right. And the books you've already written, and once they're out, they're out. And you can then write more to promote, but you have options as to how you continue to sell them. Mm-hmm. And I long ago decided, in fact, I think it was my very first interview with somebody. I had an informational interview when he said, at some point in consulting, if you stay in it long enough, mm-hmm. people are going to, you need to make a decision. How will you stop trading off time for money? So I started to think about that right away. And the nice thing about writing, as you well know, is you can collect things. So you can have collections. In the fiction business, we call it anthologies. In the nonfiction, we call it collections. I don't know why. It's one of those things, right? So, but if you think about what can I do to replace some amount of my time with an evergreen product that just continues to sell year after year? And so I should, and let me talk about this for a second. So somebody actually asked me, what are your goals for this book? And I said, my goals for every single book, nonfiction, that I write are to sell 1,000 copies in the first year. And that's not a lot of copies, right? That's not, I mean, it's fine for nonfiction. It would be nothing for fiction. And then 200 more copies every year after that. For the rest of my life, for the rest of my kids' lives, for the rest of the grandchildren I don't have yet. Right. So, and when you think about it that way, it's kind of the best kind of pyramid scheme for you as a business, right? So that the work you continue to do grows your evergreen passive income.
Yeah, and it is interesting though with nonfiction, because at the moment I've been working on this how to write nonfiction book and really thinking about a lot of these issues. One of the issues with nonfiction is time and how things age, because you might write, you know, you do agile project management, or you know, there are project management methodologies and terminologies and things that actually go out of date or change, or they decide they want to add some other level so that people can get, you know, whatever, the new certificate. So how do you balance evergreen nonfiction with books that are going to have to be updated, which to me becomes a bit of a pain?
So there's a couple ways to do this. The way I write is not, I mean, there are a couple of different things. I was trying to define run rate in a book, in a, one of my books. Mm-hmm. Run rate is what it costs a project team for a given week. Right. So I was saying, if you have this kind of a salary per day, it's this many, this much per week. And with seven people on the team, it's that much. So, and that's kind of the only thing that's, that makes it not evergreen. So people are always going to want to do good projects, right? They're always going to have to manage their project portfolio. They're always going to have to hire people. They're always going to, they're always going to look for a job, right? I mean, you wrote a job, a book about that. So I think it's really important to say, what, how do I write this book in a way so that I'm not dating it? Right. And I think it's, yeah, social media changes some things, and yet we are all human. And so when I focus on the human interactions, then that's how we say, okay, this is the evergreen part. So I often, so I'm writing a book about geographically distributed agile teams, which I'm sure everyone in your audience just, you know,
is going to rush out and buy.
Yeah. And their eyes glaze over. But we're pair writing it, which is the interesting part. And we have our tools in an appendix, because it's not about the tools. It's how the team works together. Right. So that is the evergreen part. And then, you know, at some point, there'll be other tools.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, is really to try and separate those bits that change from the bits that are evergreen. No, that's fantastic. Well, we should talk more about business plans, since that's what I was just so interested in some of that other stuff. But we've talked about strategy. So strategy is really, I guess, the direction that we're going in and some of the bigger decisions we're making. So let's get down into a business plan. What are some of the aspects of your one or two pager? Like, what are some of the subheadings, I guess, on there?
So I've, for many years, I've broken out the revenue for my business. And I really want to talk about revenue, not units.
Yes, let's do that.
Because it's revenue for workshops and assessments and consulting and speaking and coaching, all right, whatever it is I do. And I don't actually, I don't care. I don't track units. So I don't actually track the number of workshops I sell. I track the revenue. I don't track the number of books I sell. I track the revenue. And when I had an opportunity to make an audiobook from my self-published books, I said, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing is I need to sell another workshop to more than cover the cost of the audio. And that's what I had this decision. So I said, okay, if I sell one program management workshop, I know I can cover the cost of the audio. So I did. I actually sold three. So it more than covered the cost of the audio. And then it turns out that making that decision, right, should I or shouldn't I, what do I need to do to cover the costs? Because if you don't look at the income and the outgo, you don't have a business. Then I said, okay, I'll do that. And it turns out I actually sell more audiobooks for that book, which then prompts people to buy the print, not the ebook. If you would say, and now this is nonfiction, it's not the same as fiction. I'm sure that fiction is totally different. But if you had ever said that to me before, I would have said, you're nuts. And so you're not nuts.
No, and just on that, I've been banging the drum on nonfiction audio for a while. I think it is totally different to fiction. I've actually stopped doing fiction audiobooks because it's too expensive and it just doesn't sell enough unless you're a massive seller. But nonfiction readers are devouring audiobooks, and they're not price sensitive, are they? It's just amazing.
No, they're not. So I have more audiobooks to do. I am, you know, working through this and I have the rights to them. So I can actually price them the way I want to, mm-hmm. as opposed to the way Amazon wants me to.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we've got, and I agree with you, I'm the same. I measure money. I mean, I look at my bank account pretty much every day. I like tracking everything and in the money sense, but I don't track numbers of books sold either. It's at the moment, it's still so much of a pain when you're wide to track all this stuff, right? But what are some of the other things on your business plan?
So it's how I get income. And then when I decided to stop traveling as much, how I would replace income. Mm-hmm. So if I have no idea what I actually did in 2016 or 2017, that was before, right? This is now. So, but if I have a strategic goal of replacing this kind of revenue with this kind of revenue, what do I have to do that? So that's why I'm focusing on my virtual workshops, my online workshops, so that I can still have interaction or possibly no interaction with people and still replace enough of the income. And then if I'm not traveling, I am actually not that good at writing on planes. Mm. I tend to sleep. So, I mean, if I'm taking an overnight flight somewhere, I sleep. I'm not going to work. So what else can I do for writing? So I have monthly columns. I have a quarterly column in one place, a monthly column in another place. And then what do I want to do for collections in my books? So I have more production, because again, that production will feed the overall revenue. But and then if it's literally a collection, then it's not as difficult. Although I'm working on a collection right now and it's almost as difficult. So yeah.
Who knows? But it's interesting because I feel exactly the same way, particularly with the nonfiction side. It is a bit of an ecosystem. Well, in fact, all of it, the same with fiction. It becomes an ecosystem and it feeds itself and just mm-hmm. kind of does that growing circle. But some of the things you're talking about there, just be clear, what is the difference between a business plan and a to-do list?
Oh, thank you. A business plan says, here is my strategy, right? Well, first of all, why am I in business? Mm. What's my mission, right? I want people to do reasonable stuff that works. That's why I call myself the Pragmatic Manager. That's why my publishing company is called Practical Inc. That's why INK as opposed to INC. That's why, yeah, there's a pun there. And that's why almost all of my stuff has practical or pragmatic, but it's all useful stuff you can do now from wherever you are, right? So that's really important. So if you know your mission, and you might, if you're a fiction writer, you might say, paranormal romance. I'm a big romance reader, right? So romantic suspense, that's my mission. Or cool stuff that happens to interesting people, whatever it is. And then that's your mission. Now you say, what are the tactics I need to do to support that mission? I am not a one book a month writer either. that just seems difficult. But what do I need to do to do that? And then you have and especially what mix of products and services. So the plan is in the products and services. The to-do list is how you implement those products and services.
Mm. So just so a line on your business plan is put this book into audio, so insert book name here. And I think that's important. Yeah. Like the specificity, be specific about the project you're doing on the business plan. But then the to-do list would be, hire a narrator, for example. Hire a narrator does not go on your business plan.
No. It's first, it's the decision to say, go audio with this.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Right. And maybe the reason why you've made that decision, and I keep coming back to this reason why, because in the last couple of years, I've dipped my toe into a few things. So I dipped my toe into maybe having a publishing, you know, like a, I have a small press, and I dipped my toe into, is it more than just me? And then I backed away from that because I felt like, do you know what? My number one value at the very top of the business plan is freedom. My, you know, I want freedom. And if I become a publisher, I don't have freedom. So therefore, it doesn't fit with my plan. So that would be, you know, an example of kind of why you need to write down the reasons why, I guess. And the other thing that people will say is, oh, I don't need to write it down. It's all in my head. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's nuts. So. Sorry, all you people who think in their heads. I think in my head, too. Yeah, and until I write it down, it doesn't get done. So it's really important. Now, and I'm not saying that everything you write down gets done, right? You and I were talking before about how I fast switch. So I have a system that kind of looks like Agile and Lean, where I work on one small thing at a time. And my one small thing is anywhere from 20 minutes to half an hour. I might write a section in a nonfiction book. I cannot write a chapter that long, that fast, but it could be a section or two. I might write a blog post. I might write a column. I might do any number of things, but I can always get something done in about 20 minutes, maybe half an hour. And because I do that, I can make progress on several fronts. So I have a proposal for a given client. I have workshops to do. I have talks to finish. I have this kind of blogging and that kind of chapter in a book. I want to make progress on all of that. And so that I write down what I want to do this week. But if I didn't write it down, how would I ever know what I want to do? And it's even more important at the strategic level. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have a great business, you got to write down what you're going to do for your business. Now, that does not mean you get to beat yourself up if you don't accomplish everything that you wanted to write down. I'm not a fan of beating myself up. I'm not a fan of anyone else beating themselves up.
Okay, so we are back for what is the last third of the interview. Now, something went wrong and cut off our previous conversation. And I wanted you to talk a bit here, Johanna. Well, one, what happened? And two, what lessons can people learn about when things go wrong in a semi-live situation?
So we had the tree guys here cutting down the trees so that in a storm, they wouldn't come over and take the house and take the electricity and take the Wi-Fi. And of course, the tree guys took the Wi-Fi. They just got right through it. And so I texted you so that you would know. Well, I texted my husband, who is not here, who emailed you. And luckily, you had a great sense of humor about this. And then we replanned for a different day. And this is exactly what we do in our businesses. Exactly. Because things don't always go right. And I use a form of planning called rolling wave planning, which means I plan for a certain amount of time. I deliver what I plan to deliver. And then I plan for the next bit of time. So we had a very short rolling wave and we replanned and we're back here.
Yeah, we're back, I think, like 4 days later, because between us, you know, we figured it out. And I think this is really important, too. So for everyone listening, I had one particular podcast interview where nothing recorded and I didn't realize until afterwards. And this was seriously 4 or 5 years ago now. And ever since then, I am incredibly careful and I'm constant. I don't record this all in one go. I record different batches. So what happened when we got cut off, I was still able to rescue what we had already. And now we're finishing off. So this is actually a great podcast episode to talk about it, because the plan, we were talking about business plans, and the plan is not set in stone, is it? Like, we come up with a plan and then life happens.
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, even if it's a small thing like an interruption for Wi-Fi that I got back, you know, 48 hours later, something like that. But what I often see is that I want to change the course of my business, or I don't finish something I thought I would finish. Oh, gee, this never happens to anybody. And I want to replan what I'm doing. So I was thinking about how can I coherently explain what I do. So I have either a piece of paper, or now I use a Google Doc on, because I can always look at my Google Doc. I don't have to be at home to look at my piece of paper. And I say plans for this year, right? Mm-hmm. And that's it. And then I have another line underneath that for my consulting, my nonfiction career, which is what do I want to be known for? And for my fiction, what do I want to be known for?
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, you and I both have wide businesses. Not only are our books wide, but we have a varying number of things. We do workshops, we speak, we write, it's fiction, it's nonfiction. There's all kinds of stuff. So it's really important to say, at least for me, what do I want to be known for is as much of a mission statement as I'm going to get to.
Mm.
I don't need to spend days and weeks deciding my mission. It's just not worth it. And then, I know you're so surprised. And then I break it up by quarters. What do I want to achieve in a given quarter? Because that allows me to say, what do I want to achieve in a month? Now, these are not detailed plans. This is a list.
Mm.
And I might even, so for this year, I wanted to do 3 nonfiction books. And one is a collection and the other two are actual writing. And I've been blogging about this stuff. So I have some material, but it's not all of the material I need. And I have a fair amount of writing to do. And my nonfiction books are, I try to keep them to 50,000 words and I don't always succeed. So they go longer, and I still have my blogging and I still have my quarterly and my monthly columns. I mean, I have work as a consultant. So I really have to adjust as I see what I'm doing and actually what I'm able to finish.
Mm, and I think that's so important. Like an example for me right now is this How to Write Nonfiction book, which I had planned. I had thought it wouldn't take that long, and it's taking so much longer than I expected. And then I had some life stuff happen, and I'm really glad I actually allowed a buffer. I think it's the first time I've given myself a month buffer. But even to get things like the print format done, like The ebook is easy enough, right? When we format ourselves using Vellum or whatever, but getting the print formatting right with nonfiction, particularly the formatting, don't you find the formatting is so complicated with nonfiction when you have so many subheadings and all the different things? So the print, and I've just done a workbook and I'm doing an audiobook and all these products, it takes so much longer. So one thing I did want to ask you is, you talk a lot about project management. You're an expert in this project management niche. What are some of your tips for authors about project management? Because indie authors have to be project managers.
Oh, yes. So I really like action plans where I'm going to say, what is the first small thing I can do? What is the next small thing I can do? Because I am very big on crossing stuff off my list. I happen to use a form of personal Kanban. I know, sorry, I'm using jargon. But that just allows me to see all of the work in progress and where it is. So if I have several columns on my board, which is what's ready for me to do, what's in progress, if I'm waiting for editing, if I'm waiting for feedback, if I'm waiting for review, and then done. So it's a very simple board. And for me, it really works because this way I can really monitor what do I need to do today and this week, because I only plan for a week at a time, and how much work in progress do I have? So I suspect that many of our writing colleagues have a lot of work in progress, right? We have a short story here. We have a novel there. You and I both have nonfiction books, and I have a ton of varied nonfiction. Almost every writer I know has a lot of work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the smallest thing I can make progress on and still finish, especially today, tomorrow, and this week?
And I think that it's so what we've done really in this interview is we've gone from the strategy, which is a sort of life direction and a business direction, down to the business plan, which might be one page with a couple of bullet points, down to the project plan. And each book is really a project, I think. That's what I love about being an author. I was trying to think, because talking to you, I don't talk to many consultants anymore. And one of the things I love about the consulting life is it's very much project based. Mm-hmm. And when you finish a project, you can like tick that off and say, I did that project. And many people's CVs in the consulting world are based on the number of projects they do, project life cycles rather than, I don't know, years or whatever. So it's so interesting. I think there's so much, similarities. And I wanted to ask you, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see from indie authors that you think that you can see because of your business expertise?
Oh, they think they have to write 5,000 words a day all week. I mean, I'm very big on writing for 15 minutes at a time. I can finish a very short blog post in 15 minutes. I can get partway through an article in 15 minutes, enough so I know where I'm going to be tomorrow when I pick it up. But it's for me, it's the consistency. I write for at least 15 minutes every single day. And yes, it really is every single day because I really like the streaks. I am a streak person. And it's the same with my Fitbit. If I walk every day, I write every day. I keep my streak going, and I really like that. Mm-hmm. Now, not everybody does, but if you don't, say to yourself, I have to get a chapter done. Oh, that's a horrible thing. Right. But if I only have a scene or a section, I can actually get that done.
Mm. Do you have a streak tracking thing? Do you have an app or a checkbox or something?
I have an Excel spreadsheet.
Ah, woohoo! Old school.
I know, you're so surprised. So my daily word count, and I have 5 different columns because I'm doing all this stuff. I know. I'm a little, I want to use a word that I don't think I should use with a so I'm a little
retentive.
Yes, thank you very much.
There
I'm
we
a
go.
Little retentive about that, and I actually discovered that tracking my words helped me write more. Mm-hmm. So for me, it really works. It does not work for everybody. So don't do it if it doesn't work for you. But for me, it really works.
That's interesting because I don't. I think people assume that I do. I don't know why, but they often assume I'm better at these things. I'm not really. What I do with my iPhone, I track my steps. So my step count, so a bit more like the Fitbit. And what I have trying to do is track breaks. Which is because I'm very bad at taking breaks. So my husband said, rest is not something that happens when you're totally exhausted. It's something you're meant to do in between. So I was going to ask you, because I want to ask you now about your health issues. So you have a different blog called createadaptablelife.com. So just tell us, because you're obviously achieving so much in these 15-minute blocks, but you also have a health issue. So how do you manage your health issue and being a healthy writer and your consulting business?
Okay, so I had this inner ear hemorrhage in 2009, which left me with total deafness in my right ear, and which actually has a side effect. I sleep really well. I roll over onto my hearing ear. I do not hear my husband snore. So my sleep has improved tremendously. However, I do have vertigo because I blew out the vestibular system in my right ear. So I use a relator. I look like a little lady. I mean, but
no, I don't know what that is. Explain what that is.
Oh, it's a four-wheeled walker.
Oh, okay.
So you actually saw me with it when we were in Oregon at the writing workshop. Well, the business class.
I didn't even notice.
Well, it folds up. And once I get to my seat, it folds up. It sits right there. It's next to me. I have a wonderful, it's not one of those old lady walkers with tennis wheels on it, right? I can actually stride. I can actually walk with it, which is a really good thing. So I have chosen not to travel as much because I have found that when I travel, I don't eat right, I don't exercise right, I don't walk enough, except in the airport, right? In the airports, you walk a lot. But it's really hard physically to maintain my health when I'm traveling. So I really pick and choose where I travel and when. And I don't go to Minnesota in the winter anymore. For those of you who don't know, Minnesota gets even more snow than Boston. It's always cold. My relatives, my husband's family is from there. So I've said to them, not in the winter, only in the summer. So I really manage this. And I find that when I'm home, which is more of the time, I take more frequent breaks. The good thing, I don't know if people have seen, I drink a variety of things. I have iced tea with lunch. I have seltzer after in the afternoon. So I'm always drinking. And the nice thing about always drinking is you have to get up every so often. And the more frequently, the better. So I can always decide to do, especially in the winter, should I do a few hundred steps while I'm up right now? It's only a few minutes. And so I can maintain my health and I can maintain my walking and I can maintain all of my exercise regimen while I'm doing my work.
The vertigo, can you just describe what that is? Because I think some people think, oh, it's that woozy feeling you feel if you're up high. But I have a family member also with it, so I understand. But why is it so debilitating?
Oh, so the kind of vertigo I have is not BPPV, which is benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, where your crystals fall out of your ears. No, I have a special kind of vertigo. Because I have no vestibular ocular reflex, when my head goes up and down, my eyes don't track properly. And especially when my head goes side to side, my eyes don't track properly. Now, I am on great medication, so better living through chemistry. So you cannot actually see this unless I had specific goggles and a dark room and all that stuff. But the effect is when I bend over, either front or back, I get quite dizzy and I don't actually know I'm headed for the floor until I'm on the floor. So I sit down to tie my shoes. I sit down to get dressed. I watch my husband get dressed in the morning. He stands there on one leg and pulls up his pants. And I think, when was the last time I did that? Oh, I don't know, years ago. So there are many things I cannot do. I cannot run. I cannot dance. I swim weird because
you're head off in one direction or something.
So I only do the breaststroke and I can no longer do the crawl because I can't turn my head that fast. So there's a lot of things I can't do. On the other hand, I have a big mouth, right? So I can talk. I have big ideas, so I can write. And so that's what I've been focusing on since the vertigo really got worse. And it gets a little bit worse every single year, which is unfortunate, but it's what I have.
I think this is a really important thing because I think that writing, I mean, health issues, either your own health issues or other people in your family's health issues, this is something none of us can avoid in our life. This happens to either ourselves or someone we love or both or whatever. And being a writer means that you can write, well, hopefully either you or, you know, you can do something that can still, you know, help in that time. So on createadaptablelife.com, what are some of the things that you've learned, I guess, from the fact that you're such a high performing consultant and also somebody with a health issue? Like, has anything stopped you? Have you had negative comments from clients or like, how has this changed things?
So I do warn my clients that I use a rollator. Before I used the rollator, I said to them, I use a cane and I always look like I'm a little bit drunk. I promise you I'm not. So I mean, I warn people because if they don't know, it's really a shock.
They will judge you for your physicality, not your brain.
Right. So, but what I have found and Create Adaptable Life is that I have two audiences. One is people with the vertigo problems, because I have several pages about inside a vertigo attack and seven things you can do to manage your vertigo. And those get a lot of hits. And the rest of the time, I only blog once a week with a question of the week. Because I have found, I mean, for me, questions really kind of prompt all these ideas and feelings and synergy, right? I can take something from here and relate it to something there. And I didn't even know that until I started to write the question. So I find that it allows me to explore in these personal essays a different form of writing, because it's a personal essay as opposed to more of the teaching stuff I do on jrothman.com and not even any of the fiction. So it's yet a third way of writing. And secondly, it really helps me clarify what I'm thinking about myself, which I find really helpful. So, and the people who comment are all really nice.
Yeah, and supportive, because other people with health issues probably, or loved ones with health issues. And I think that's really good, because what you've, and why I really have enjoyed talking to you, is you do have these different types of writing. You have the pragmatic manager, which, you know, some people are never going to read that stuff and other people are going to love it. And then you've got your fiction, and then you've got the health side of you, and you're incorporating writing into every part of your life, which is amazing, really.
Well, it's fun. And as you said, I can do it. So I can do it on an airplane. I can do it even just on my iPad or in a notebook. I can do it at my desk. I can do it when I travel. Even when I'm in some place where it's really, really loud, because I have tinnitus in my right ear, right? That poor right ear. It's just horrible. But that way I can give myself a little bit of an escape with my writing, and then come back to everybody. And I find that that's really helpful.
Fantastic. Well, look, tell us. One more question. You do teach virtual workshops, don't you? So tell people where they can find you and a bit about your workshops and everything you do online.
So everything is on jrothman.com, JROTHMAN.com, because I got my .com, you know, back when it was fine to have your first initial and your last name. There weren't that many URLs. I know. Oh, well, everything is there. And I'm in the midst of revamping my online workshops so that I make the videos shorter and I make it more bite-sized chunks so that people say, I could take a 6-week workshop or a 4-week workshop, and it would be fine. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on that. And I will be offer nonfiction writing workshops. The first is getting the habit of writing. The second is getting the habit of publishing. Mm-hmm. And the third, possibly fourth, I'm still working this out, is about book writing. Because I suspect that you, like many of my friends, you do the nonfiction book thing. This is about these, you know, every consultant wants to write a book.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So, and they all have funny ideas. So I want to help them make reasonable choices for them, right? Everybody has their own set of choices. Mm-hmm. So how do you make your choices? How do you finish the damn book and get it out, right? Everybody I know has at least 2 or 3 books in progress. Well, in progress is too many. Done is what we want.
Fantastic. Well, that is a great place to finish. So thanks so much for your time, Johanna. That was great.
Thank you so much.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Johanna Rothman today, and that you got some tips for revisiting your strategy and plan for your author business, or starting one if you haven't got one yet. So next week, I'm talking to the lovely Michael Brent Collings about writing, depression, and mental health. Now, Michael Brent has been on the show twice before, and he has been one of the most popular guests because we always have a really jolly time with lots of laughs. He is a horror writer, and as I've said many times, horror writers are often just the loveliest people. because they get their darkness out on the page. And I love Michael Brent's books. He is Bram Stoker Award nominated for his book, The Deep, which I highly recommend. So you can read that this week. And you can still expect an enjoyable show, even though we're tackling a difficult topic. And of course, even if you're not someone who suffers from depression, and I'm not someone who does, but we all know people who do. And I certainly do, members of, you know, loved ones and, you know, difficult times. So yes, we will be talking about that next week. I hope you will join me. I will be sharing lots more stuff. And happy writing, happy publishing. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.